right, welcome to the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur here on a lovely Monday afternoon, depending on your definition. Also, depending on your definition of afternoon. Anyways, so big show ahead for you guys. Donald Trump's ratings, I have that in the next segment for you guys. They are miserable, yet the Republicans are not losing. Why? I have an explanation that the rest of the media has, to be fair, they've touched on it, but haven't focused on it in a way that I think we're going to. I think that's the real answer. But his numbers are miserable. I'll give you every facet of that. Bernie Sanders now has to deal with an FBI investigation into Jane Sanders, his wife. Is that real or is it nonsense? We'll discuss a little bit later in the show. There's that redneck revolt going on. We're going to talk about that in the second hour, but you might actually like it. Twisty twist. And then Ann Coulter, has she launched a false flag operation? Okay, so that's also in the second hour, fascinating stuff. You know that Anna is debating Ann Coulter at Politicon coming up on July 29th, 30th. I'm debating Ben Shapiro. So check that out at politicon.com/TYT. That's where you'll be able to get tickets as well. And then as you might be able to tell, I'm sick today. It's obvious that it's Anna's fault. She was coughing last week. I'll now be coughing this week. So you have that to look forward to. Longtime viewers and listeners of the Young Turks are very familiar with this pattern. Okay, anyways, let's get going because there's a lot of interesting stuff in the news. Okay, Jay Sekulow is Donald Trump's lawyer. Now, he's a guy that we've done stories about before. He's the one that did that scam, I mean charity, where he defends Christians by somehow funneling, over the course of about 17 years, $60 million to himself, his businesses, and his family. They had to spend every dime on themselves, including a private jet, by the way, of course, and vacation homes. So Jay Sekulow is also, apparently, I found this out after we did that segment, the guy that I yelled at and told to shut up, which was then portrayed at Mad as Hell, the movie made about the Young Turks. And so now he's Trump's top lawyer, great, or one of his top lawyers. So you're not going to be surprised to find out that Jay Sekulow is full of crap. So he's going to go on and try to defend the Donald Trump Jr. Story and meeting with the Russians. Now, you know, this is Trump's son. There's a very clear email that says, hey, this is the Russian government. They have information that is going to help your father. That's passed down by Goldstone, who's a friend of Donald Trump Jr. and a friend of the Russians. Very clear in the email. And Donald Trump Jr. says, I love it. He himself released those emails. It is clear as day. So what is Sekulow's answer going to be to that when he's on TV? Let's find out.
You've said that no law was broken. But do you accept what we heard from the president's pick to run the FBI, that what should have happened there, if it, you know, a situation where you have representatives of a foreign government offering assistance to in an election, that what should have happened is that the FBI should have been notified?
Well, I've wondered why the Secret Service, if this was nefarious, why did the Secret Service allow these people in? The president had Secret Service protection at that point. That raised a question with me.
Well, that is an interesting question. So let's look into it a little bit. Well, let's go to the Secret Service spokesperson, Mason Brayman. How do you explain yourself? I mean, why did you let those Russian people in? Obviously, Jay Sekulow is concerned. These top level Russian lawyers and PR people and possibly a spy connect with deep connections to the Russian government. It's Secret Service, what were you doing? Donald Trump Jr., this is the spokesperson for the Secret Service. Donald Trump Jr. was not a protectee of the USSS in June 2016. Thus, we would not have screened anyone he was meeting with at that time. In other words, yeah, that wasn't our job, man. So this goes to a couple of amazing points about the scam artists that are involved with Trump, including Sekulow. Number one is, you're gonna throw the Secret Service under the bus? You know their job is to protect the president. Those are the last guys I throw under the bus. And it's just ill-advised and stupid. Second of all, come on, man, you didn't do one fact check before you went on air. I don't know, I'll blame the Secret Service. That'll go over well. Should we check to see if they were protecting Donald Trump Jr.? Nah, let's just go on air. Or maybe they did check and they're like, it doesn't matter. Our voters, our base doesn't care. We will lie every time, brazenly, have it be contradicted the next day. Nobody's going to see the Secret Service statement unless they're watching the Young Turks. I'll get to say it on TV. I won't get challenged. And people go, that's a really good point. And from then on, anything else we'll call fake news. But the reality is, no, he had no Secret Service protection. It is the worst excuse, because it admits that it is so dangerous a situation, so precarious a situation, the Secret Service should have blocked it, and then either didn't bother finding out the Secret Service had nothing to do with it, which is gross incompetence, that's their best case scenario, or like, yeah, we know the Secret Service didn't have anything to do with it, let's just lie about it right to their face and in front of everyone in the nation. We're Trump guys, what difference does it make? All we do is lie. So we've got, this used to be a two-bit scam artist that was irrelevant, you know. He was happy to come on our show and get yelled at and then scurry away. Now he's one of the president's top lawyers. This is what we've sunk to. I almost said skunk to, which could also fit. Okay, now let's go to a very serious issue. So that's serious in terms of politics. This is serious in terms of real life. Okay. So how's the war going in Iraq and Syria? I know that Trump said he was going to get really tough on ISIS. We'll share some of his thoughts about that in a second. That's easy enough to say. But how about civilians? Well, first, now let's be fair. Let's talk about what Obama did when he was fighting the same war against ISIS in those two countries. Air Wars is a group that documents civilian deaths. The coalition forces and the US forces have in the at certain times said they're part of the same team as us. They are helping to count civilian casualties. Obviously our guys undercount, because you know they so for example, some of the ways that we undercount is we won't talk to any witnesses on the ground. Because if we did, they'd say, yeah, you killed a lot of civilians. That was an aunt, that was a grandmother, that was a baby. So they're like, in a couple of the horrific instances, including hitting a school, we're like, let's not talk to witnesses. But Air Wars does talk to witnesses. They have a more accurate count. So that this does not bode well for Obama. Air Wars researchers estimate that at least 2,300 civilians likely died from coalition strikes overseen by the Obama White House. Roughly 80 each month in Iraq and Syria. So if you say, where were you guys when that was happening? Well, we were right here and we were criticizing him for that throughout. Now I know that there are no such things as pristine war and there'll be many mistakes. I understand that. We should take all the effort in the world to preclude that. And one of the things that we used to criticize Obama about is in the places, not necessarily here, but in the places where they did signature strikes from drones, that meant that they did not know who was on the receiving end of that bomb. They knew that, hey, we have some signatures there, like it might be a cell phone. Well, we think that cell phone was at some point connected to a bad guy, let's go ahead and bomb it. And that led to a tremendous amount of mistakes. So that was under Obama. And signature strikes were mainly done in other places, but obviously lots of mistakes in fighting ISIS with 80 a month civilians, not terrorists, civilians killed. Now, Trump promised to do worse. Let's take a look at what Trump promised during the campaign.
I like to do one thing at a time. I would knock the hell out of ISIS. Okay. I would hit them, Brian, so hard like they've never.
What
been
about
hit
civilian
before.
Casualties? What about the fact that we're targeting them and people are very concerned about collateral damage?
I would do my best, absolute best, but we're fighting a very politically correct war.
Yeah. Well, we see
and
that
the other thing
in
is with the terrorists. You have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families. They care about their lives. Don't kid yourself. But they say they don't care about their lives. You have to take out their families.
So he promised to murder civilians, and then he got elected. So did he murder more civilians? The answer is yes. Now he said terrorist families. Now when you're dropping a bomb, how do you know if it's a terrorist family or someone else's family? So for example, sometimes under the Trump watch, we'll drop a bomb because all rules are now suspended apparently. You'll get the details in a second. Because we think we saw an ISIS fighter on a rooftop two homes away, and we'll drop a bomb on the house that's not the one he was on, but the one that's two away, killing 11 people in that house. Those, the family killed in that house, they weren't terrorists, they were civilians. But Donald Trump doesn't care. He's like, what difference does it make? All right, let's prove it out. So is that the case? Let's look at the numbers. Maybe he's killing less civilians than Obama. Let's find out. As of July 13th, more than 2,200 additional civilians appear to have been killed by coalition raids since Trump was inaugurated. Upwards of 360 per month, or 12 or more civilians killed for every single day of his administration. So let me just put those numbers in context. The entire time that Obama was president, 2,300 civilians were killed in this conflict. Trump in the first 6 months has already killed 2,200 civilians, almost caught him. And now let's look at the numbers that they just outlined there. Under Obama, civilian casualties were 80 per month. Under Trump, they're 360 per month, 4.5 times greater. Has begun. Sorry, guys, the coughing has begun. You're going to have to bear with me, okay? So, now think about the earlier number. 12 or more civilians killed every single day of his administration. So you wake up today, and I know that a lot of Americans look and go, oh my God, what did he tweet today? And sometimes it's very serious, sometimes it's light, and we laugh at what an idiot our president is. But every day that you wake up, understand that Trump has authorized through his actions 12 more innocent civilians killed in Syria and Iraq. Every day, the next day another 12, the next day another 12. Those are the numbers that we've gotten. So how did we get here? Well, as the Daily Beast reports, to give you one more sense of context for how bad it can be at any particular time. In one well-publicized incident in Mosul, the US admits it was responsible for killing more than 100 civilians in a single strike during March. But hundreds more have died from coalition attacks and the chaos of fighting there. So that one we admit. We say, oh yeah, no, those numbers are accurate. We killed 100 at one time. Oops, what difference does it make? We promised that we'd kill their families. There they are. I mean, maybe they're related, who cares? Okay, if they care, they're certainly not showing any evidence that they do. So how do we get here? In one of his first moves as president, Trump ordered a new counter-ISIS plans to be drawn up. Second on his list of requests were recommended, quote, changes to any United States rules of engagement and other United States policy restrictions that exceed the requirements of international law regarding the use of force against ISIS. So what does that mean? Well, Daily Beast actually did a great job of summarizing. This is what they said. In short, Trump was demanding that the Pentagon take a fresh look at protections for civilians on the battlefield, except those specifically required by international law. That represented a major shift from decades of US military doctrine, which has generally made central the protection of civilians in war. So, in other words, we have now changed the rules and said, that's it, have at it, Hoss. So don't worry about the protection of civilians. Do the bare minimum to protect civilians. Let's go get them. And if a lot of civilians die along the way, they're not US civilians, who cares? They're grandma, grandpa's babies, whatever. Remember when Trump pretended to care about the beautiful babies in Syria? When Assad had, we think, had killed him through doing that chemical strike? And he's like, oh, the beautiful babies, the beautiful babies. How about all the ones we're killing? Ah, who cares? Who cares? Let's go kill their families. Okay, Larry Lewis is a Joint Civilian Casualty Study lead analyst. He says, if we're losing opportunities to hit ISIS because we're nervous about civilian casualties, if it is not required by law, then we're saying, really look at it hard. Now, so he appears to be supporting Trump's policies, going, hey, listen, man. I mean, if I miss an opportunity to hit an ISIS guy a couple of houses away, because I was worried about 11 family members sitting there having dinner and with their kids, and I was concerned about their life, well, then I'm not going to be able to hit ISIS hard enough. And by the way, that will be persuasive to some right-wingers. They'll say, I mean, what are you going to do, man? I mean, you got to murder some families to get ISIS, right? I think there is another way, and certainly Obama, who I thought was doing way too much of it, was not doing it anywhere near this degree, because he was telling the generals, hey, be careful, because when you go to kill civilians, not only is it morally repugnant and what we accuse ISIS of doing, but it also is counterproductive. So a former State Department official is going to explain why it's counterproductive. He said, "We have spent a long time advancing the idea that preventing civilian casualties is not only a moral imperative, it's also an operational one. These lessons come directly from our military's counterinsurgency experiences in Afghanistan and are endorsed by members of our military at some of the highest levels. But so far, we haven't seen or heard anything that shows that President Trump understands that." And in fact, of course, we've seen the opposite. And General Mattis, who's now the defense secretary, gave a speech saying that they are going to do an annihilation of ISIS. Look, if you could just annihilate ISIS, great, that's what we want you to do. Nobody's against that. But apparently, his directions were taking a little broader. The month after Mattis delivered the new plan, US-led forces likely killed more civilians than in the first 12 months of coalition strikes combined. So the first month, more than the whole previous year, because they're like, civilians, so what difference does it make? Look, it is in their actions. They end their words. He says, we're going to kill their families. Then they go kill their families. They more than quadruple the number of civilians killed. They can kill more civilians in 1 month than coalition had done in a whole year. Well, and then here's a CENTCOM spokesperson was on the phone with The Hill. They had to walk this one back because it seemed a little too politically incorrect. But he identified himself as a spokesperson for CENTCOM and told a reporter this. President Trump said prior that once he gets in, he's going to kick the shit out of the enemy. That was his promise, and that's exactly what we're doing. Well, but okay, show me body counts of ISIS fighters. Okay, but what we've got here is body counts of civilians. So that's not kicking the shit out of anything other than innocent people. And then what do you think their family members are going to do? Are they more likely to be on our side or their side? Human rights groups that are so concerned about what ISIS is doing to the local population. They've been interviewing these the people who were able to escape places like Raqqa for years. And normally the things they go, oh, thank God I got rescued, I got out of there. You know, the ISIS was killing our family, oppressing it, and all the horrors that they talked about. And then they were running out of food and water. Now, when those same human rights groups talk to the survivors of Raqqa and other cities in the area, and especially in Iraq, Raqqa's in Syria, Mosul's in Iraq. Excuse me. Those same survivors say, yeah, the starvation was bad, and oh my God, it was brutal under ISIS. But the worst thing was the American airstrikes, because as we were about to leave, a bunch of our family members got blown up. They're dead now. So it doesn't solve your problem. Sometimes it makes it worse. So how is this being enforced? And one last example, Lieutenant General Stephen J. Townsend says proudly, we shoot every boat we find. Okay, guys, sorry. It's going to be a rough week. Okay, maybe we'll do a poll later in the week. Should Cenk stop showing up? Anyway, so if you think, well, that's every boat we find that's an enemy boat, well, they had it coming, that's great. That's how we talk about annihilation of ISIS. Well, let's find out what's actually happening. Air Wars has documented numerous civilians reported killed in recent weeks as they had attempted to flee Raqqa by way of the river. Shortly after Townsend's remarks, Raqqa's being silently slaughtered, that's another human rights group, reported that at least 27 people in Raqqa had recently been killed attempting to fetch water around the Euphrates. So if you don't use human judgment anymore, you don't use your mind and you don't use morality, and you say, just bomb every boat, bomb everyone by the river, who cares? Well, what are you going to do? You're going to bomb people getting water, you're going to bomb people fleeing, and yes, you're going to kill a lot more civilians. Yes, you're going to kill a lot more families, but they're not going to be terrorist families. There are people who were just trying to barely survive in Raqqa or get the hell out of Raqqa because they hate ISIS and want to run away from it. And as they were bravely trying to do that, the last thing they saw was a US bomb dropping on their heads and killing everyone on board. So if this is your idea of getting tough with ISIS, okay. Well, I guess you're comfortable and you think every morning that you get up, yes, another 12 innocent civilians killed today. Trump's in charge. But if you think, yes, there is a deep moral problem with that, yes, we're supposed to be better than our enemies, and yes, this is not a smart strategy for how you defeat ISIS and gain the support of the local population, well, then this is very disconcerting news. Okay, now, one more story for you guys in this hour. Okay, we're not the only guys screwing up across the world. We got a story of a guy who's a bit of a lunatic. Okay, unfortunately, he's also a world leader. Let me tell you about it. So the leader of Chechnya, Ramzan Kadyrov, was randomly on HBO's sports program, Real Sports HBO. Why? It turns out he likes MMA fighting, so shocking. This guy loves Putin, and he's always doing exercise videos where, you know, he's Putin style, sometimes shirtless, etc., and bragging about his body and running around with other guys with their shirts off. Okay, so they, but at the same time, he's been charged with horrible record on gay people in Chechnya, including killing them, torturing them, etc. So David Scott, the reporter for HBO here, did a great job. Asked him about it. He said, how about the alleged roundup, abduction, and torture of gay men in Chechnya? And Kadyrov said, turns off camera and goes, why did he come here? What's the point of these questions? Well, the point of the questions is that you're a terrible guy and you might have done some hideous and perhaps homicidal things. I think at the end of a fun interview about MMA, it might be fair to ask about that. So they did. Here's the result.
Это ерунда. У нас таких людей нету. Нету у нас геев. Если есть, заберите в Канаду. Хвала Аллаху подальше от нас, чтобы очистили кровь там. Если есть таких, пусть забирают там.
But do you not get concerned when you read these accounts of young men who say they've been tortured for days and delivered to their families in sacks? Does it concern you as a matter of law and order in the Republic when you hear these stories?
Это придумали, они шайтаны, они подаженные, они не люди. И будьте они прокляты за то, что они на нас наговаривают. Они перед Всевышним все равно ответят за это.
They're slandering us, he says. So presumably he's saying none of these charges are true because it's slander. But so do you discriminate against gays? I mean, they're the devil and they're not humans. I can't believe they would say we're discriminating against them. What do you mean? Not noticing the irony of his answer at all. Does that guy seem like the kind of guy you trust is doing right by the LGBT population in Chechnya? And of course, preposterous things like we don't have any gays here. Now, to be fair, I had mentioned earlier that there's a lot of pictures of him with guys. So if I'm going to claim that, I should prove it to you. And that there's nothing wrong with this, but let's just take a look here at picture 67 here. And some of these are after a workout, some are just good friends. Okay, all right. And then his bestest friend, this is my favorite picture of all time in regards to this. Look at him like, oh, daddy. Daddy, can I snuggle up to you after he's been giving medals for what he's done? Okay, now let's. It gets worse, though, believe it or not. He went on to say, America is conducting an anti-Russian policy against the country's leadership. They know that I'm ready to give my life for Russia, and that I have a good army capable of attacking and defending. We'll see how things go for everyone. That does not sound good. Is Chechnya threatening war with us? What kind of an insane guy is this? So, and it's weird, you would think that, you know, he's Muslim. A Muslim foreign leader threatens us in that way, but Trump hasn't said anything. That's super weird. And I thought that there was nobody better for the gays than Trump. I don't know why he's not taking action here. There's reports of people that are missing, gone. They're worried that they were tortured, killed. And here's a Muslim leader saying that he's threatening, he's gonna threaten us even worse in a second here. And yet I haven't heard a word from the Trump administration. That's interesting. He says, we have a strong government and are a nuclear state. Even if our government was completely destroyed, our nuclear missiles would be automatically deployed. We will put the whole world on its knees and screw it from behind. It was horrific in the beginning. This guy is talking about launching nukes against the US. This is mental. Okay, and then he goes, oh, and by the way, there are no gays here, but we will screw you from behind. I don't quite know what that means, but you know, could mean one of several things. Okay. Isn't it amazing what we choose to focus on and not focus on? So here's a leader of Chechnya, you know, within Russia, who's, you know, Chechnya is mainly a Muslim population, again, within Russia. And he's saying, hey, we got nukes, we'll destroy you. North Korea, we talk about a lot, I think rightfully so. ISIS, we can't stop talking about. Here's a guy with nukes saying, I will use them against you. Nary a peep, okay? Well, you say he's a clown. Well, okay, I agree with you, he is a clown. But there's credible charges that he's murdering gay people, his own citizens, right now. What do we say about ISIS? Muslims murdering people like Yazidis and different ethnicities and gay people, throwing them off of roofs. We got to go invade. Now, believe me, I don't want to invade Russia, and I got no interest in going to Chechnya in any way, shape, or form. But it is curious that the government thinks, eh, whatever. I choose to focus on other things. I don't choose to focus on this guy at all. And the media largely goes along, and it's a little laugh about what he's going to do to people from behind. And then we're done with it. And if you're gay in Chechnya, God help you, because nobody else is going to, it looks like. All right, sad state of affairs. When we come back, Trump's poll ratings, why are they so low, but why has it had no effect? I think I've got a good theory on that. And Bernie Sanders is attacked, and so is his wife. I wonder if I'll defend them. But no, we'll look into the substance, and you'll get to see for yourself whether there's any validity or not. Okay. All right, back on the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. Yeshua Espaila says, I don't know who's manning Cenk's mic, but that dude is super on point when it comes to cutting it just before every cough. So nice job, Bart. And yes, I still have a cough drop in my mouth. Anyway, Dr. Chaos MD writes, and Trump is desperate to show up Obama in any way he can, which includes killing more civilians. Unfortunately, that might be true. Captain Jinglepants says, wow, nothing makes me feel worse about having it easy in America, like hearing we killed 12 civilians a day in another country. And remember, that's just in that ISIS conflict. There's other places we're bombing throughout the world as well, let alone our support for Saudi Arabia and the atrocities they're doing in Yemen. Okay.
I just want to point out, Bishop Beam did also say, as I told Cenk during the break, mm-hmm. please tell Cenk to stop coughing. He should just raise his arms above his head. Is it true? New poll. Is it going to work? Is he going to do it?
Well, whether I'm going to do it is a different question. I'm not buying it. We'll see. You know what? Fine. Next time I'm coughing, I'll try it. Okay, but we'll see if it works or not. Okay, let's keep going. Let's go to the Trump poll next. Okay. New poll results are in from an ABC Washington Post poll on Donald Trump, and they are disastrous. Americans give President Donald Trump the lowest 6-month approval rating of any president in polls dating back 70 years. That is the history of polling. The most unpopular president at the 6-month mark ever, for as long as we've been keeping records. Just 36% of Americans polled in a new ABC News Washington Post poll approve of Trump's job performance, down 6 points from his 100-day mark, itself a low. So the 100-day mark was the worst ever. The 6-month mark is the worst ever, but it's even lower than the 100-day mark. So 36 points is terrible for a politician. Terrible. Now, I'll give you some context here. Here's all the recent presidents that they're referring to and their popularity and lack of popularity. There's only, here, let's show that next graph. There's only three that are underwater. So you see like Truman and Kennedy and even Lyndon Johnson, very popular, enormously popular in their first 6 months. The three that are underwater are Trump, Clinton in his first term, and Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford was then 3 points away in popularity from Donald Trump. That's because he just pardoned Nixon and everyone hated him. Okay, Nixon had done Watergate and he's like, whatever, he made me vice president, I'm pardoning him. And Trump is lower than that guy. Okay, so how does Trump respond to this? First of all, obviously, with a tweet. So he says, the ABC Washington Post poll, even though almost 40%, is not bad at this time, was just about the most inaccurate poll around election time. Okay, so let's get this right, guys. First of all, it's not almost 40%, it's 36%. So what is the almost for? Like, second of all, when you have to say you're almost at 40% in a popularity rating if you're a politician, you're in bad, bad shape, okay? So second of all, is it true or not true? And you say like 40%, not bad, not bad. You know what I'm saying? I mean, almost 40, it's not 40 at all. But anyway, okay, well, that indicates that you think it's true. So why are you saying it's inaccurate? By the way, if you actually care about reality, ABC Washington Post poll has been pretty good, actually. It's been among the better polls. And had Hillary Clinton winning the popular vote by about 4, she won it by 2%. It was among the more accurate counts of the popularity results. So he's not right about that either. Okay, these things are provable. Look, if you think you're a Trump thing fan, just go online, see if who's telling the truth and who's not about whether ABC and Washington Post poll have been accurate or not. You're not going to do that because you're going to go, oh, I just want to listen to the dear leader. Okay, anyway, so why is he so unpopular and why can't the Democrats take advantage of it? Well, first of all, let's look at Russia because that's the leading topic that the Democrats push and the media pushes. And there, we do have some bad news for Trump. 63% in this poll, produced for ABC News by Langer Research Associates, say it was inappropriate for Trump's son, son-in-law, and campaign manager to have met with a Russian lawyer during the campaign. That's a pretty bad number, 63%. 6 in 10 also think Russia tried to influence the campaign, and among those who say so, 67% think Trump aides helped, similar results in April. So 60% of Americans roughly believe, yeah, the Russians were trying to help Trump, and of that 60%, another 2/3 of that group says, yeah, the Trump aides were looking for Russian help. So that's it, that's why he's unpopular, right? Well, hold the phone, because there's another wrinkle to that side that makes it a lot less clear. As a combined total, the number of Americans who both think that the Russians tried to influence the campaign and that Trump aides helped is 41%. Very similar to the 40% who don't think Russia was involved or are unsure about it. So yeah, they think that a lot of folks think that Donald Trump Jr. shouldn't have done that meeting. They think that maybe Russia was trying to help Trump overall. But when you get to the bottom line of, hey, look, is this an important thing? Do you think that Russia and Trump colluded? No, the country split. It's not 36-58. I mean, he's losing by 22 points overall. So that question is split. So it doesn't look like Russia's actually doing the damage. So the reason the Democrats harp on Russia is not necessarily because it works that well. As you can see, the polling indicates, no, the country split on it. It's not particularly effective in attacking Trump. They do it because it's safe. You can just say, Russia, boo. That way they don't have to talk about policy because their donors would be annoyed if they talked about increasing the minimum wage or going to Medicare for all. So they don't hurt their donors and they try to get voters in a cheap way. Now, by the way, I also think there's a huge problem in the collusion. I think it is real. The Donald Trump Jr. story showed that in a lot of ways. But what you can do is you can do an investigation of that without harping on it nonstop, thinking that it's good politics. Because as I've told you all along, I don't think it's great politics. But for the reasons of truth, you should pursue it. So if it's not Russia, what is it? Why is Trump polling so low? Well, first of all, they don't have a great impression, Americans, of his competence. They say just 38% say he's making significant progress towards his goals. 55% think he's not. So that's not a good number. They mean you're not getting anything done. Okay, now how about strength? Now you'd think Trump is always talking about, oh, I'm strong, I'm gonna make a strong move, right? No, apparently I don't think he's very strong at all. In his relationship to the world, I'll show you the next graph here. Under Trump, US world leadership has gotten stronger is only 27%. 46% think that we have gotten weaker under Trump, 27 to 46. And 23% say about the same. So if you're a leader that prides yourself on strength, those are miserable numbers. So, okay, not competent, not strong. How's he doing on the world stage overall? Let's go to that graph. As you look here, it says, Trump, do you trust Trump to negotiate on US's behalf with other world leaders? 34% say we trust them more. 66% say we trust them less. Terrible numbers. We do not trust them to negotiate on our behalf. Remember, his whole thing was the art of the deal, art of the deal, man. I'm the best negotiator. Well, 2/3 of Americans think you kind of suck at it. So these are significant problems, and we haven't even gotten to the mother load yet. And the mother load is healthcare. So on his party's signature campaign issue, healthcare, Americans by a 2-to-1 margin prefer Obamacare over the Republican plan to replace it. 50-24%. Another quarter either wants something else entirely, 17%, or undecided, 9%. By the way, that 17% number, I'm surprised it's not larger, because it's so easy to go, ah, I don't like Obamacare or the Republican plan. Give me something magical that's better. And by the way, maybe it's not magical. Maybe there's something like Medicare for All that is much, much better. And in fact, polls, great, but polls at 58%, better than either one of the plans. But overall, no, most people have made up their mind. They're like, look, I don't know about the other plans. I do know that Obamacare is way better than the Republican proposal. 50-24 was a giant lead for Obamacare. What happened, Republicans? I thought Obamacare was terrible. I thought the American people hated Obamacare. No, it turns out they hate you way, way worse. But still, the Democratic Party doesn't win anything. Look, one more thing on policy, and I'll tell you why the Democrats are not winning. Medicaid versus taxes. The Republican plan cuts Medicaid by over $700 billion. And lucky for rich people, it gives it in tax cuts to the rich. So the American people, do they agree with that idea? Well, let's take a look at this next graph. So what's more important for the federal government to do? 63% say provide coverage for low income Americans, not just even middle class, just for low income Americans, 63%. Only 27% say cut taxes. And that question did not say cut taxes on the rich, did not say cut taxes on big business, it just said cut taxes. And even so, only 27% chose that. The Republicans do not stand for what Americans believe in, not remotely close. The only thing that Trump is doing okay on, and this is very relevant to his rankings, my God, when this goes south, how low can Trump go? So the only thing he does okay on is what's the state of the economy? And there, by a margin of, here, let's take a look at this, 43-41, they approve of his handling of the economy. But there's also a big number there that's not sure, that's still waiting, the jury's out. Well, that number is the correct one, the folks that are saying the jury's out. Look, the economy is not in shambles right now, so fair is fair. So I think that 43-41 makes some degree of sense. Now, is it because of what Trump has done? No, he's riding off of what Obama has done so far. About a year from now, we'll see what Trump has done after he's had about 18 months in office. My guess is that'll be an even worse disaster. And he's going to the 20s. I said from day one, he's going to the 20s in popularity. But if the economy gets ripped apart, he might go in the teens. He might get the Chris Christie numbers. So the fact that the economy is not falling apart, again, largely because he hasn't been able to change what Obama's done in 6 months. And Obama had added 15 million jobs. That's why he's barely hanging in there. But yet, the Republicans have won every special election. Now, I know they're mainly in Republican districts, and that's, of course, very relevant. But you would think that they would have been able to pull out one or two victories like the one in Georgia. Hillary did better than the Democratic candidate in the special election in that district. What the hell's going on? And by the way, one more thing that's devastating for the Republicans and Trump. So the Republicans overwhelmingly still approve of Trump, about 82% or so. Democrats overwhelmingly hate Trump. His approval is like 11% with Democrats. How about independents? See, that's the most important thing. You want to win elections, you got to keep independents. So maybe he's holding independents. No, he's not. Independents popularity rating for Trump is only 32%. They don't like him. That's less than a third of the independents that like him. That is a guaranteed formula for disaster and electoral losses. Now, Trump's not up again until 2020 if he makes it that far. But you did have the special elections at the national level. The Democrats won none of them. So what is going on? There's only one graph that explains it. It's right here. So the Democratic Party stands for what? For people saying they stand for something. By the way, that's just something, anything. Only 37% of the country thinks that. 52% say the Democratic Party stands just against Trump. That's all they are. They're an empty party, and they oppose Trump because they're on the opposite side. Only a little bit more than a third of the country thinks that they stand for anything at all. So the biggest ally Trump has is the Democratic Party. If it wasn't for his miserable failure of opponents, he'd get crushed. On the day of the election, his popularity wasn't any better. It was 37%. How could a guy sitting at 37% win an election? That's because his opponents are the only people in the country that are worse. Democratic Party, it is so clear what you have to do. If you actually care about winning, winning electorally, and much more importantly, winning on policy, but you don't care about those things. You know what you do? You pound on healthcare, you ask for higher minimum wage so that people who are working really hard, can actually make a decent living. You look out for people that want to have the American dream for their kids. You do the free education for college. You would do all these things that are enormously popular. And look at how popular Medicaid is, let alone Medicare for All, which is sky high in popularity. Yet, Democratic leaders, where are you? With the exception of Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and a couple of others in the Senate, and now 130 some odd congressmen in the House, now the Justice Democrats and the National Nurses United pushed a petition asking for it. Only those guys are for Medicare for All, but the leadership, nowhere to be found. Yes. One more sec. Good old Marco Rubio. Anyway, okay. So, if you were looking for why Donald Trump and the Republicans are not getting killed in the ballot box yet, you have your answer. It's the establishment Democratic Party leadership. Look, I believe that the current Democratic incumbents should be primaried. I think that their record of failure is record breaking. They lost to Donald Trump, they've lost the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and 69 out of 99 state legislatures. They almost literally cannot get any worse. So, but when we go and say there should be primaries of Democrats, they say, why are you trying to hurt the Democratic Party? Are you insane? These are the people hurting the Democratic Party. They can't find a way to beat a horribly incompetent, greatly disliked president like Donald Trump. So if Democratic Party as it exists today, if you can't do the job, for God's sake and for the country's sake, step aside, Butch, step aside. You know what my answer is, it's justicedemocrats.com. Go to justicedemocrats.com/win and become part of the effort, man. Because if you let these Democrats run against the Republicans again, they're the only people in the country who could lose to Trump and these Republicans who are greatly disliked. So look, if you got a better answer, have at it, Hoss. I'm all for it. The only thing we know now is Trump is in a terrible shape. And the only thing worse than Trump, according to the American people, both at the ballot box and to some degree in the polls here, is the current establishment of the Democratic Party. Stand for something. If you're going to be a progressive or pretend to be a progressive, at least act like it and show us that you're going to fight for progressive priorities. If not, step aside and let real progressives fight against these Republicans, and we'll show you what we can do. JusticeDemocrats.com. Okay. Okay, now let's go to another piece of Trump hypocrisy. The Trump administration likes to do these different themes. They do, you know, themes for manufacturing, Manufacturing Week, etc. So this week's a different week. Let's go to find out what it is. The White House announced that it would hold a Made in America Week to highlight the president's America First policy. Well, that's great. Well, let's go to the Trump both during the campaign and right after he got into office, talking about this issue.
I'll be the greatest jobs president that God ever created. I'll take them back from China, from Japan, from Mexico.
We're here today to celebrate American engineering and American manufacturing. We're also here today to celebrate jobs. Jobs.
We have a very big push on to have auto plants and other plants, many other plants. You're not being singled out, believe me, Mary, I promise. Okay. But to have a lot of plants from a lot of different items built in the United States. And it's happening. It's happening bigly.
It's happening bigly. Well, let's check in on the progress of that and see how it's going. Mark Noller will ask the question about this week. He said, asked if the Made in America campaign will influence an end to Trump brand products made abroad, official says, quote, oh, I will get back to you. In other words, no. So we checked into it. Trump shirts are not made in America. They are made in China. China's killing us on trade. They're killing us on trade. What do they do? We got to stop that. Anyway, they're made. Trump shirts are made in China, Bangladesh, Honduras, and Vietnam. I don't believe those are American states. Okay, his suits are made in Indonesia and Mexico. The eyeglasses, who's got Trump eyeglasses on? God help you. I hope you're not on the road. Anyway, made in China. He has Trump Home. Those are items in your home made in China, Turkey, and India. And everything in his hotels, pens, toiletries are, I mean, come on, that's his pride. They're the jewel of the Trump empire. Yeah, no, they're made in Taiwan and China. How about Ivanka's products? China, Indonesia, Vietnam, India, Bangladesh, and Ethiopia. So what happened? I thought we were going to make everything in America. This week is Made in America week. And Trump goes, it doesn't matter. My own voters are so stupid. I'll make all my stuff abroad and I'll tell people that I care about Made in America. You think that even like beforehand, okay, he's running for president, he's a scam artist, so he's telling you that he's gonna bring the jobs home. And remember when he was like, Oreos is going to Mexico to make some of their Oreos over there? Chris Christie, you're not allowed to eat Oreos anymore. He said that, okay? He's like, we have to do something about this, okay? So we can't eat it anymore, okay? That means you can't buy Trump shirts. I mean, who's buying Trump shirts anyway? But apparently some suckers. Suits, you can't go to any of his hotels under his own thing. But you think after he became president, he'd do something about it, right? At least the one thing he could help is not necessarily Oreo or another company. He could do his own company. Nope, they're still making them in all those different places. And by the way, they're undercounting. There's 12 countries overall where he outsources to, more than that list. And then there's more countries on top of that, it gets shipped through, etc. One last time, all 12 countries that he produces his products in: China, Netherlands, Mexico, India, Turkey, Slovenia, Honduras, Germany, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Vietnam, and South Korea. And I'm pretty sure none of those are in America. The world's largest hypocrite. All right, we'll be right back with the Bernie Sanders story. Back on the Young Turks, members of the day are Christian Bryant and Jenny Saxena. And we do member shout outs every day. Members make this show possible. And it allows us to be independent media and give you a different voice out here, as you're going to see in the Bernie Sanders story. And you get the whole 2-hour show commercial free. Watch it anytime you want, download it or stream it. And the network shows as well. So that's at tytnetwork.com/join. And we are still doing our campaign, giving you a free trial membership for a whole month, just this month, till the 27th, I believe. So do that now, put in the promo code FREETYT in order to get that free trial membership, okay? Omaha Ramp Monkey writes in on hashtag TYT Live, at least Trump will still skin his math is consistent, 36% equals good, bankruptcy equals win. Playing too much golf, thinks a low score is better. Maybe that's the right answer. And 100% Kofefe writes in, you forgot his policies, which are made in Russia. Damn, you did it again, 100% Kofefe. Okay, now let's go to Bernie. I am told that there is a controversy surrounding Bernie Sanders and that perhaps he should withdraw from any idea of running in 2020. Gee, I wonder who would want him to do that. Could it be the entire Republican Party and the entire Democratic establishment? And all of a sudden, out comes all these stories about how his wife is under investigation. So let's tell you about that, and then you make up your own mind, and we'll ask you at the end, actually, whether you think this is a real issue or not. So the New York Times headline from over the weekend, inquiry into Bernie Sanders' wife may tarnish his liberal luster. Okay. Again, at the end, I want you guys to tell us if it's tarnished, because it could be. Like, if you thought, oh, wait a minute, he's a hypocrite or something, then believe me, progressives would be very, very concerned about that. So let's find out what this is about. New York Times reports the couple and many of their supporters maintain that the investigation is politically motivated and that it was set in motion by Vermont State Chairman for Donald J. Trump's presidential campaign, Brady Tonsing. That sentence makes it sound like it's in question as to whether it was started by Brady Tonsing. The couple and their supporters claim that this is politically motivated and it was started by a Trump guy. So was it? Now, you don't have to give me your thoughts as a New York Times reporter on whether it's politically motivated, but yeah, it was started by a Trump guy. So it's a kind of a weird way of writing that sentence that already makes you think like, I mean, that's what they're saying. You know, Republicans say this, Democrats say that, I guess we'll never find out. Anyway, as you can see here, no, it is Tonsing. In his letter of complaint to the federal prosecutor, Mr. Tonsing, who was then vice chairman of the Vermont Republican Party, said he was requesting, quote, an investigation into what appears to be a federal loan fraud involving the sale of Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington headquarters. So the Trump guy is the guy who throws in the incendiary word of fraud, reports it to the FBI. There's an update on that that is very important at the end of the story, but let's find out what the whole story is in the first place. The charges revolve around a $6.5 million bank loan that was obtained with a promise that college donors would quickly pay back at least $2.6 million of the debt. They did not. Ms. Sanders was ousted and the college went belly up. Now, if you're concerned about that particular college in Vermont, okay, that's fair. And if you were a trustee, you went there, there's a 100 reasons to be concerned. And if you charged Jane Sanders with mismanagement and all these facts were correct, then you'd say, okay, then wow, it turns out the senator's wife is not that great at management. Ooh, okay, but that might be a fair charge. But wait, where did fraud come out of this? She asked for debt and then they didn't have enough money and then it had consequences, okay. Well, the college needed to demonstrate that it had the financial resource to pay the bank loan, which it did with Ms. Sanders' assurances that it would receive $2.6 million in donations and increase its enrollment, Mr. Dunn said. Okay, so it turns out that they didn't get as much enrollment as she has thought or donations. Now, nobody at a bank goes, oh, if Jane Sanders or anyone says that enrollment's gonna increase, well then it must increase, that's a true statement. I'm gonna write that down. Oh, it didn't increase, that's fraud. That's preposterous. That was her best estimate as to what would come in donations and enrollment. Everyone knows you can't possibly know that ahead of time. You're taking your best guess and your job at the bank is to figure out if that's a worthy credit-worthy endeavor. And whether you're taking an appropriate amount of risk or not. Now, I know there's a guy in the Republican Party who says bankruptcies are awesome. He's the president. He's gone bankrupt 6 different times. And when asked about it over and over in the campaign, he said, well, that's a smart thing to do in business. You just go bankrupt and then you don't pay any of your debts. Ha ha. The guy brags about it 6 different times, 6 businesses, bankrupt, 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 bankrupt. No problem there. Jane Sanders thought that enrollment would increase at the college, but it didn't. That's a mistake. Is that intentionally telling an untruth? How would she know? Maybe enrollment would have increased. Of course that's not fraud. Of course not. And again, the update is going to show you that actually no one thinks it is. This is all made up from the Trump guy. The fact that Democrats, some Democrats are certainly on social media and then certainly leaking to reporters are backing this charge up. Why? He's the most popular politician in the country and he's in your party. He's on your side. He caucuses with you. He's in Democratic leadership now. But if Bernie won, the other guys wouldn't. If his ideas win, well, the establishment doesn't, and their donors don't win. So let's take a, you know, smear job from Trump and back it in the press. And by the way, let's sprinkle in another smear job. And the New York Times throws in, the senator had already taken some grief last year for purchasing a $575,000 vacation home on Lake Champlain. This is what they do to every person that has any money at all who's actually trying to do the right thing. Oh, Al Gore trying to save the planet with fighting climate change so that we won't all have the rising sea levels and the disastrous storms, etc. But he has money, got him. He's got a nice home in Nashville. He's got this, he's got that. And yet he still wants to do the right thing. What do you want him to do? Be like, oh, if you're rich but a greedy prick, that's a good thing, right? Like, oh, yeah, you should chase, I want lower taxes. The Koch brothers, yes, Sheldon Adelson. Wait, you're rich and you want to help people? How dare you? You're a hypocrite. By the way, Bernie Sanders is not rich. He's one of the poorest senators there is. Oh, but he's got a vacation home. I mean, look, everywhere is different. In LA, $575,000, I don't know if it gets you a one bedroom apartment. Okay, so anyway, wow, living in a lap of luxury. So look, it's a big amount for average American, I get it. He's one of the poorest senators. FDR was rich. And they're like, oh, you're rich, but trying to help the poor. Yeah, that's right. Okay, that's not a bad thing, that's a good thing. So, but they just sprinkle that in as if like it's a worthy charge. Because why? You just muddy the waters. And then people go out and go, I don't know, man. I hear he's losing his luster with progressives. I hear it's tarnished. Somebody said FBI. I don't, okay. So who's going to jump in? All the guys who are centrist. Like, so Stu Loser or Loser or whatever, he's a media strategist, worked for Michael Bloomberg, who made all of his money, of course, in finance, says about Sanders, if you aren't able to give a good gold watch speech, he's done great things and we're all grateful for him, and imply he's ready for retirement, you're not going to be able to do anything. He's saying the Democrats should tell him, hey, okay, here's a gold watch, now piss off. He's an old man, he continues. He's an old man from a predominantly white state with decades of politics on guns and other issues that are problematic for Democratic candidates. Okay, Stu, then why is he the most popular politician in the country? Right now, Hillary Clinton's at 35% approval. Donald Trump's at 36% approval. Bernie Sanders, in the last poll I saw, is at 61% approval. The single most popular politician or senator. So tell me again about the gold watch speech. You see, these Democrats don't want Bernie to run. And it has nothing to do with policy. If they cared about policy, they would put Bernie on a pedestal. They said, look at this guy, he's so popular and he's winning with what was supposed to be Democratic ideas. Oh, but the donors would be upset. So let's smear him instead. Okay, now the update to the story. The FBI's source for information that sparked a probe into the wife of Senator Bernie Sanders admitted this week that the information he passed along was hearsay, according to a local Vermont television station. So this is the Hill reporting this. So same guy, Brady Tonsing, the lawyer who passed on the information to the FBI, reportedly got his information from Republican State Representative Don Turner, who told WCAX TV in Vermont that he heard the information from friends. This is preposterous. So you have a local Republican politician saying, I heard it from friends, I guess. And then he tells Tonsing, who is the Trump guy in Vermont, and he's like, good enough, who cares? It doesn't have to be true. It just has to work as a smear. And don't worry, he probably thought accurately, a lot of the Democrats will secretly help us. You think they'll rise to Bernie's defense? Are you seeing anyone on TV, a Democrat's going out there going, Bernie's the guy, this is an outrageous charge, it's not true, it's led by this Trump smear campaign. Where are you guys? Where's the Democratic? I thought he was in the Democratic Party leadership. Oh, when you want him out front in a speech so he can draw a crowd, all of a sudden, yay, Bernie. You want ratings on MSNBC, all of a sudden it's a Bernie Sanders town hall event. But when he needs your help on a BS charge, nowhere to be found. Funny how that works. And let's go back to Turner, the guy who heard from friends that this might have happened. Turner told WCAX TV that he wouldn't have shared the information with federal officials. That it was so unreliable, that the guy who kind of got the information in the first place, he has no direct knowledge of it, would not have turned it into officials. The Trump guy's like, who cares? Truth doesn't matter. Don't worry, soon the New York Times will do our job for us. And they'll smear them all over the place, and then we'll turn around and then go, oh, the New York Times said it. I didn't say it, the New York Times said it. We'll start the story, and then the mainstream media, the Democratic Party, and the entirety of the Republican Party will look to put a hatchet in Bernie's back. Don't worry, we got this. And so far, that's almost exactly how it's gone down. Now look, that's my opinion on it, but you guys are incredibly independent, and some of you disagree with me on the right, some of you disagree with me on the left. So, okay, let's get your thoughts on it. You're a progressive audience. Do you think his image is tarnished? That's what we're asking you. Will the inquiry into Jane Sanders tarnish Bernie Sanders' progressive reputation? You tell us, audience. Maybe the New York Times is right. Maybe this is really concerning. I mean, she thought enrollment was going to go up, and it didn't. And it didn't, because she's not a fortune teller. Maybe you think this is a super important FBI investigation, and that this disqualifies Bernie Sanders. Okay, all right. I'm curious to see what you guys are going to think about it, and we'll give you the poll results when we have them. So this is the best line of attack they have against Bernie Sanders. It's pretty pathetic. Finally, establishment, you nervous, bro? All of a sudden, before it was a joke, and Bernie, he's got no chance of winning. And you had all your dumbass pundits go out there and talk about, oh, no chance, he has no chance, he's from Vermont, he's a socialist, no chance at all. And then he closed a 60-point lead on Hillary Clinton when he had no name recognition, and she had all the name recognition in the world. And you had your dumbass pundits go out there and go, oh, well, I mean, he didn't win, did he? I mean, so you don't know that in politics that name recognition is an enormous factor? You're not going to mention that? You're not going to mention that he closed a 60-point lead? You're just going to go, well, he didn't win. He didn't win the primary, so I guess Hillary's more popular. Does she look more popular now, 35 to 61? But nonetheless, nobody out there defending him in the mainstream media. All of a sudden, he's got no friends, and they turn around and they look at this and they go, oh, I don't know, man. I hear fraud. That's what I'm hearing. So you know how these guys operate, and it is gross. Bernie at 79, Bernie at 109. But it is interesting that they're coming now, because apparently they're afraid of him. You don't smear someone like this, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or in the media, unless you're scared. So don't worry. In reality, what this story tells you is Bernie's got him on the run. We'll be right back.